This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn Shunning and Julian. Now, much has been talked about with regard to the new cabinet lineup. Over the week, we've taken a look at it from several angles, from the lack of a deputy prime minister to PASA's presence in cabinet, as well as bringing a former bank CEO to run the Ministry of Finance. But today, we're taking a look at the prime minister's party itself and how Parti Pribumi Bersatu Malaysia has essentially elevated its presence and power in government.
That's right. In the 2018 cabinet, Bersatu had the prime minister and five ministers. Now it has the largest presence in cabinet with 10 MPs set to take up ministerial positions and a further 13 selected for the deputy minister spots.
Now added to the prime minister's post, Bersatu has 11 portfolios, more than double the party's influence when it was in Pakatan Harapan. Tan Sri Muhyiddin's party holds two out of the four senior ministers' positions created. With the newly recruited member Dato Sri Azmin Ali made the senior minister in charge of international trade and Dr. Razi Jidin as the senior minister of education.
Now, in addition to that, Bersatu also has other important portfolios, including economy and special functions under the PM's department, women, family and community development, home affairs, agriculture, rural development, as well as communications and multimedia. So Bersatu and Tan Sri Muhyiddin have certainly gained a political foothold. But the question also is, will it last? And how will this situation play out between the individual coalition members over time? So to explore this, we have on the line with us this morning Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Bridget. Now, we've heard a few views on the cabinet lineup this week. What's your general assessment of them?
Good morning. I think that this is a cabinet of accommodation. I mean, it's really about initially political survival, not only Muhyiddin's survival, but that of his party and also his government. We've seen his attempt to try to build legitimation through the choices and to shore up his political position, particularly in terms of issues of trying to garner perceptions of technocratic governance, Islamic governance, and, of course, appealing to Malay nationalism. And I think these issues really, at the same time, may shore his up his position in the short term. They have real bigger problems for issues of governance within the cabinet itself and also for all Malaysians.
And of course, obviously, we've heard a lot of words being hurled at the new government, words like backdoor and legitimacy and so on. And in connection to that, Tan Sri Muhyiddin yesterday actually sought Dr. Mahathir's endorsement of the new cabinet. What do you make of this? Is this a way of establishing further legitimacy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, to reduce the opposition to the government, there has been outreach towards Mahathir. At the same time, there's also an attempt to try to push this idea that Malaysia needs to move on and move on past the politics and sort of focus on everyday sort of governance set of perspectives. And this is a legitimate argument, but it's also using by the Muhyiddin government for legitimation to reduce some of the real fundamental questions about how the government was formed and its composition and what are the questions associated with how it's going about its job.
And Bridget, how does this cabinet lineup play into the current dynamics of the different parties in this new government?
Well, I think, you know, we see a situation where the two main players are Bersatu and UMNO. And I think, you know, the fact of the matter is the backdoor government came into power using the issues of competition and divide and rule. And in the sense, Muhyiddin's cabinet follows the same sets of issues in the sense that it's built on this idea of competition, the idea of kind of splintering, and he's trying to put his loyalists close to him. On the other hand, whether or not his loyalists are in Bersatu is another question, because there's still this driver of competition.
And do you see UMNO and PAS being happy with the positions they've been given? Or do you see other issues cropping up over the next couple of months or even years if we do see this government continue? We did see some dissatisfaction voiced by Dato' Sri Azalina Othman, for example, over Twitter yesterday.
Well, clearly, we have to distinguish between what PAS feels versus UMNO. I think PAS is more happier being in the government in a more low-key position. They're interested in positioning. They have a clear agenda of what they would like to present in terms of changing Islamic governance. They've got players within the government. At the same time, they're not such a large party that if the government faces challenges, that they don't necessarily have to take the blame for those challenges. Now, in the case of UMNO, where there is clear factionalism, the cabinet represents a kind of a generational shift in terms of some of the choices. The people in their 50s and 40s, they are actually in certain different camps within UMNO, and many of those other camps have been displaced who had previous positions, not only those that had charges against them or have charges against them, but also those that don't. So I think that there is clear disgruntlement. There is people within UMNO who felt that they could actually do better by going to elections as opposed to being part of a government where they have to power share and be comparatively second fiddle. And those noises are already being made, and I think they will continue to be made, because keep in mind that a lot of these issues are being played out within the party elections and party dynamics that are taking place. And positions in government give different individuals leverage in making resources as well as to position themselves for the competition within UMNO itself. So there are clear tensions, not just within Bersatu and UMNO, but within Bersatu and within UMNO. And I think one of the reasons why the structure of the cabinet has been set up as it has, which is to basically not have a clear leadership succession, to pit each other against each other in terms of competition, or at least we can talk about it potentially as another way, as accommodation, to allow all the parties to be there, but at the same time not necessarily show as much favor to others, creates its own set of dynamics. And what are those dynamics from a perspective of policy? I think one of the challenges of the Pakatan Harapan government was that there was a lot of cooks on issues of economic policy. I think one of the challenges of this cabinet is a similar one, that the clear decision-making processes in terms of what are the ideas and how the plans are going to be laid out remain unclear. And the issue and challenge of cooperation, particularly given the global headwinds that Malaysia faces in terms of the economy and the virus, I think are really going to be a challenge, because it is a sense of pitting different actors against each other as opposed to creating a more coordinated, more focusing on plans to address the country's problems.
And yesterday, Dr. Mahathir conceded that they would not win a no-confidence vote in Parliament. What do you think will happen to players like Dr. Mahathir and Anwar going forward?
Well, I think, they're still very important players in the political process. I think Mahathir, the fact that Muhyiddin is reaching out to him, still has important influence in terms of setting the dialogue and discourse. He's also a very polarizing figure, and I think what we've seen over the last few weeks has really affected the perceptions of his legacy, and of course also affected his credibility. But at the same juncture, I think he's had a history in Malaysian politics of not going away, and I think he will continue to be a player in that process. But how much space he gives this new government, I think, is going to be a very interesting dynamic. Anwar Ibrahim, on the other hand, is now clearly the leader of the opposition in Parliament. The opposition itself is much stronger. They have knowledge of things inside government. You can already see in the last week opposition former members of government coming out and raising questions. And I think that, the fact that this cabinet doesn't have a political mandate from the perspective of a vote, it comes in with a lot of oppositions of different sides. The strength of the opposition will be able to allow them to gain traction. And while a vote is not going to work in Pakatan Harapan's favor in the near future, I think that they are going the same influences in terms of issues of that plague Pakatan Harapan, coordination, leadership succession, division, are going to also be showcased in this cabinet, in part fed by the opposition, who is in a much more attacking mode.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Bridget. And that was Dr. Bridget Welsh, Honorary Research Associate at the University of Nottingham Asia Research Institute. And it's a very interesting situation that we find ourselves in. And I like what she termed this new government, this new cabinet, a cabinet of accommodation, which I think so far there hasn't been a lot of attention given to the fact that this the whole senior minister, four senior minister thing instead of a deputy prime minister, does place Bersatu and UMNO and quite in contention with each other to jockey over position on who's the top dog in the cabinet.
Yeah, so there's the so there isn't a clear successor, right? But at the same time, I think Dato Sri Muhyiddin has come out to say that when he's not around, Dato Sri Azmin Ali is supposed to be chairing the meeting. So what does that suggest? Now, the other thing that I want to see is there going to be a Perikatan National Manifesto? We haven't seen one, right? So how will we know what this new government is going to be accountable for? Or what are their KPIs?
All right, and we have also been running a poll on the BFM Twitter account asking you, should all elected politicians and cabinet ministers' income and asset declarations be made public? We've had 300 votes, and the vast majority, 93%, have said, yes, it should be made public. Do continue to weigh in, but right now we are about to head into the 8 o'clock news bulletin, and after that, the Breakfast Grill, where I'll be speaking with Koh Chuan Zen, founder and CEO of Plus Solar. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.